This is the Dungeon Master's Handbook. Hey there, welcome to the Dungeon Master's Handbook. I'm Michael, also known as Chicago Wiz, and thanks for listening. Glad you stopped by. We are going to be talking about in this episode more about starting your sandbox campaign. Last episode we talked about some things that might help you in getting started with an old school style sandbox campaign, and in this episode we're going to kind of wrap it up, give you some tips and tricks on what to do during the game day now that you got your brand new sandbox campaign, and what comes next. Just a recap of last episode, I shared about the idea that I use three tools to develop my sandbox campaign, and these are tools that I think that really anyone can use. You really can make a sandbox campaign. I know you hear that they're really hard and you got to come up with everything under the sun, and let me tell you, that's just not true. You can make this, you can make it starting off easy, quick, simple. And my three tricks were, I start off with broad brushstrokes. So I start off with general ideas and I stay there until I'm ready to detail them out. But those broad brushstrokes are what help guide me through every part of this. I talked about my rule of three, where three is a good number for you to use to detail things out. Not too much that you feel like you're overwhelmed and got to come up with everything, but then again, not too little that the players feel like that there's nothing there to do. So what I mean, that's three locations for the players to go to, maybe a dungeon, maybe an outdoor setting, something like that. Three NPCs for them to interact with, usually the people that they can buy crap from, people that they can sell their crap to, and people that are going to help them find more crap. And then finally, just-in-time detailing. So you detail what you need for game day, and you leave the rest as those broad brushstrokes for later on. All right, so you've done all this. You've got a great little campaign idea. You've fleshed it out a little bit with a hometown with three NPCs in it. You've got three locations. You've got three hooks ready for the players to follow. Now what? Well, have a backup plan, just in case. And what I mean by that is sometimes the players aren't going to do what you want them to do or what you planned on them doing. They're going to want to go off in a different direction. They say, you know what? These hooks just are boring. We're going to do a little exploring. Plan for that. Now, you don't have to come up with, you know, everything in the under the sun to cover that, but you can assemble some things and get some things ready just in case they do decide to go off the beaten path. One of the things that I always have is a random encounter table. The players don't know specifically what is where. They don't know that this thing is supposed to be here and that thing is supposed to be there. By having a random encounter table with maybe a couple of set encounters, that allows you to have the flexibility to throw it in when you need it. You know, if the players don't want to go to the dungeon, instead they want to explore the swamp that's, you know, in the opposite direction, so then maybe look at your random encounter table and throw in that group of Sturges at them. They don't know that they weren't supposed to be there, and you've got something that'll allow you to get them engaged, and while they're dealing with that, you can be figuring out how you're going to tie this together or what you're going to do next. Sometimes slowing them down gives you enough time to catch up and figure out where you're going to go. I've had to do that. Things will change. So, you know, No good plan survives contact with the players. Same as my game prep. I used to prepare a lot, 3, 4, 5 hours, and I'd sit and I'd figure everything out, and players would go and do stuff that I just didn't even think about. Now I come up with a general outline. I'll have an outline. They've said, hey, we want to go do this thing. We want to go save the marshal's daughter. We want to go explore the monastery. Invariably, they change their minds or they get distracted with something. Last game, they were supposed to go rescue some villagers that had been kidnapped. And instead, they decided to split the party, and half of them took off after a random encounter that they stumbled onto. And it wasn't my place to put them back on track. I allowed them to play as a split party. I had one half of the table going and saving the villagers, and they had a really cool encounter, and they got to be the heroes and get a lot of gold and all that. And the other half of the table, and I felt bad for them, but this is just what happened. They went after the random encounter, couldn't quite catch up to them, then ran into Sturges, which is, you know, the day already sucks for them, and it sucked further. Made it through that, and, you know, eventually they did all come back together. But you got to let that happen, because as a game master, not every decision is going to end up always working out for them. Now, will this have some repercussions later? Yeah, it probably will, because I like making their actions matter, even if they're going after a red herring. So there's a good chance that later on they may find out that, hey, you know what? If we had caught up to those guys, here's what might have happened. But for right now, no, I let it come out and play. And you'll kind of get to that point too. Even early on, you know, if they decide not to go and do the three things that you set up, you know, if you have enough with a backup plan, some sort of a random encounter and table, maybe two or three set pieces where, you know, you've kind of put a little time or thought into it, that'll add to the story and it'll allow them to grow and not feel like that they have to jump from point A to point B to point C. And they'll love your game for it. Also, something else, don't be afraid to say, you know what, I'm not ready for that yet. Let's do this other thing instead, and we'll do that thing that you want to do next time. Most everybody, especially if you got a group of friends that you've been playing with for a while, or even people that have come new, completely new to your game, most of the time, everybody wants to play. You know, and they recognize that you as a DM cannot possibly know everything about everything, even though you might think they want that. I have personally never ran into an issue where I've looked at my players, I said, you know what, you guys are going off in a completely different direction that I had not planned, so you're going to need to give me some time, or you're going to need to go do the things that I, you know, something that I have planned for, and we'll go do this other thing the next time. Everybody's been, you know, really cool about that. They understand that. Something that might help you to prevent that is to try to get an idea of what they are going to do beforehand. My players and I have an agreement. The Wednesday before the Sunday that we play, they will always tell me what the mission is. That doesn't mean that necessarily things aren't going to change, but they know that if they say, hey, you know what, we're going to go over to this town and do these things, then they've given me kind of heads up of what to prepare for. And my players are pretty good about doing that. And I'm pretty good about, making sure that I prepared for that. And I'm prepared for them to go a little bit off the rails. One other thing is, you know what? There may be something that you're preparing for in your game and you just want to dive down into the details even though they aren't going to do it. And I say go ahead and dive. Sometimes that creativity hits you out of the blue and you go, you know what? I've got this great idea. Strike while the iron's hot, but don't let yourself get wrapped so much into it that you don't can't pull yourself back out and say, all right, I've spent enough time on this. I think I got the gist of it. And now I'm going to go back and focus on the things that I was going to work on. That's how I built a lot of my campaign. You know, I'll be in the middle of preparing for a game and I'll go, wow, this is a great idea. I'll spend that 15, 20 minutes of sitting there noodling it out and maybe get an outline, maybe writing down some details, and then I'll come back to what I'm doing. Because you never know when you might need that or when that might come up. Okay, so let's assume that you get through your first game. Congratulations, your players have enjoyed themselves enough that they're going to come back for game two and more. Now what? Well, generally, the players are going to show you what and where they're interested in. You know, you're going to get an idea of, hey, they've really gotten into this dungeon. They're really having a good idea. So now, as you get further along, you can start going in and filling in more of the details that you've didn't do for your first game. You know, if they really like that dungeon, go ahead and make a level two or a level three. They're really getting into you know, talking to these NPCs and helping them out. We'll flesh out a little bit more about that NPC. Maybe they're really getting along with the Thieves Guild. Well, now it's time to start figuring out more details about that. But let the game guide you so that way you're putting your energy and your time into where it's going to count the most. Because some things the players just aren't going to care about. And you know what? It's perfectly fine to just leave that behind and let it wait till later. You know, it might be something that they'll grow into. It might be something that they never decide they want to do. But here's something that, again, and I said this the last episode, they don't know how things necessarily fit together. So if you've got this great idea and for whatever reason they didn't jump on it, save that. Reuse it later. Maybe you'll need to twist it a little bit, change a little bit, but you know what? It won't hurt to go ahead and pick that up and say, wow, you know what? I'm going to use this for the next game. So you're going to have a game two. Here's my challenge to you. Three more. So you started off with three NPCs. Introduce three more. Again, you don't have to get into a lot of detail, but give them enough that the players are going to possibly want to engage with them. Maybe come up with three more locations or another dungeon level if they've decided to jump into the dungeon. Whatever it is, this is how you slowly grow your campaign world. Maybe three more adventure ideas. You don't want to get to the point where you're overloaded and you're overloading them, but as you're doing your game prep, allow yourself to fill in as you go, and that's how you build your world. Now, while we're talking about building a world, I should probably take a step back for a minute and talk about tools of managing all this, because you can quickly have a whole ton of Word documents and text files and pictures and all that, and no way of organizing them. I have been using a wiki since day one of my campaign. I think a wiki is a great way to organize a campaign information because it allows you to establish those links, establish all that connectivity, and tie everything together in your world. I divide up my wiki by the campaigns that I'm running within my world. And then within that, I usually start off by the home base, the location or the area that the home base is in, whether it's a duchy or a kingdom or what have you. And then tie everything to that so that it's kind of like a spider web. You know how a wiki works. And I'm sure, you know, as you go through and you start fleshing it out, you'll figure out what organization works for you. But I highly recommend it. The service I've been using is Obsidian Portal. And I'll put that in a link in the description for the podcast here. Obsidian Portal is a nice tool. It's got some nice things where you can tie players in with your campaign. It has, you know, obviously the existing structure to support a campaign. And it's got some nice tools that allow you to do some formatting, what have you. I found it to be fairly reliable most of the time. I mean, on some occasion you have glitches. If there's another type of wiki software that you like, well, go for it, use it. Whatever it is, I hope it gives you the ability to establish your campaign documentation, and more importantly, give you the ability to have DM-only information, so that way you can keep track of these crazy ideas that you're coming up with. Now, for mapping, that's a religious subject. Here again, I've got a favorite tool that I've been using almost the entire time I've been running a campaign, and that's called Hexographer, which was recently renamed to Worldographer, and that's put out by Inkwell Ideas. I've known Joe at Inkwell Ideas for damn near a decade now. Wow. His tool, he's always been open to improving his tool. He just had a Kickstarter, I want to say almost a year ago, and the new version of Hexographer, which is now called Worldographer, is out, and it's a great tool. At its core, it's a hex mapping piece of software. It'll handle very big maps. I've got, you know, hex size of 200 by about 150, so you can do the math on how many hexes that is, and those are at probably the scale is roughly 24 miles. The landmass of the current continent that my players are in is about the size of Russia, and Hexographer handles it very easily. He's also got built into this new Worldographer program where you can have child parent maps. So you can start off with a world map, drill down, say, into a regional map, and then drill down into even a local map, which I think is really cool. Whatever you use, again, make sure that it serves your purpose. Finally, I do use documents other than what's on my wiki, and for that I use Google Docs. And I know you might use something different like OneNote or something else like that, but whatever you use, I like the ability of being able to connect to it at any time. You know, who knows where inspiration is stricken me. Sometimes it's been on a long car ride. Sometimes it's been, you know, when I'm out of town. Or, you know, at a convention or something, like, wow, I really want to use this in my game sometime. Having that online access and being able to get to your campaign documents online is a great thing. So I highly encourage you to use some sort of an online document tool to organize your information. And then finally, player input. So important. My players have added greatly to my world simply by the way they see it, and then they share it through their adventure logs. I have a reward system where if my players write up a adventure recap, they get a 10% XP bonus on whatever they earned the previous game. And they really like that. Plus, if they write something down, it then becomes knowledge that every one of the other players and the people of the world would know. And sometimes they found themselves greatly rewarded because they've written down that information. It's a great way of seeing the world through your players' eyes and figuring out maybe what you're going to do next, and adding the color that really makes your world come alive. Whatever you come up with, I really encourage you to get your players involved and to add to things like that. For me, because I use Obsidian Portal as my campaign wiki, they have this portion of the wiki called Adventure Logs, and the players can just go in and easily add another log, and they can go back and reread old ones, and, you know, for people that are new or want to catch up with what happened while they were gone. So it's a great way of getting that input. Let's see, where are we at? Okay, so let's talk about a few final bits about running your own sandbox campaign. If you're like me, you're probably going to really enjoy and think your ideas are really cool, and the players aren't going to care about it at all. And I think I mentioned this before, that you know, sometimes the players just aren't going to bite. That's okay, because just like any movie or book that you've read or a TV show that you've watched, sometimes the heroes miss the big bad guy doing the evil things. And if this idea that you had is really core to the vision of your campaign, let it grow. One of the things that I've got is I've got a timeline that if the players didn't do anything at all, what would happen to the world? And every so often I'll go in and update it because of things that the players have done. Now, you might say, well, hell, Mike, that sounds like a railroad plot. I would say no. And the reason is because this is what would happen if the players don't do anything at all. Obviously, as the players do things, this is going to change. But there are things that, you know, my players have been in my world for 9 years, and it's roughly been about 4 years game time. There's stuff that started at the beginning that they're now just seeing because of the timeline, because it took time for these things to happen. And now that they're happening, the players find themselves in what feels like a dynamic world. The world is changing, the world is growing. You know, they weren't into this in the beginning. They had their own vision of what they wanted to do. Well, guess what? Other people have different ideas, and ta-da! Here's what's happening. The big bad evil guys have succeeded in their master plan, and now you're in a world of hurt. So that's okay. You know, they don't get into something in the beginning, just put it in your pocket, maybe put a little timeline on it and say, yeah, that's all right. In about a year from now, you're going to wish you followed this. And that is what makes things come together in a sandbox world. I already mentioned about letting the players chasing after their after red herrings or following their own path, and that's quite all right. You let them enjoy themselves. You let them have some fun. Sometimes they're going to get distracted. They're going to be like, oh, man, that looks like there's a lot of gold in there. You know what? I want to go after it. Let them. You know, they're going to get back to things soon enough, and if they don't, well, the world will come knocking on their door soon enough. Save your old versions of your notes. Now, this is something I have always done, probably because I'm an IT programmer, and I always like saving the older versions so that way I can try and figure out what it was that I was thinking about. Because those details in there that you came up in the beginning, you may have forgotten something, you may have dropped a ball on something, or you may have had a kernel of an idea and just never went anywhere with it. Well, if you're looking for inspiration, look at your history, see what's there, grab a hold of it, and continue to grow it. Now, some of these ideas may just not work for you. It may not be something that you feel comfortable with, or you may actually want to dive into the details more. You know what? Go for it. Whatever's going to make you feel like you've got a great game and that you're ready to play. My ideas here are for people who don't want to do a lot. They want to start a campaign, but they don't want to feel like that they've got to create the entire world. But you may want to. You may want to fill out all six, 8, 10, 12 hexes on your hex map. You may want to come up with a complete history. And that's all right, but don't feel obligated that you have to. Another thing is don't be afraid to have a plot. Just don't force the players to go on along with it. Have that backup plan that, you know what, if they don't want to engage with whatever's really going on in your world, have something else for them to do. Just like if you were playing Skyrim or some other computer game that allows you to do that, you know. You didn't have to follow the main quest in Skyrim. You could just go off and, you know, mine for iron and make daggers all day, or, you know, go on any of the other side quests that were out there, and the game was still fun and engaging. Well, have that ability for the players. Do you want your campaign to have an endpoint? Now, for me, I don't. My campaign's end will be either when I decide to shuffle off of this mortal coil, or the players decide that they're done with it. But you might decide that you want to have some sort of a story arc where the campaign's going to end at a certain point. Well, having that master timeline that I spoke about a bit earlier is really going to be key for you to do that. And to show the players that things are progressing in this world, even if they're not engaged with it. You don't have to beat the players over the head that the climax is about to happen. They'll figure it out soon enough, I'm sure. All right, well, that's about it for some thoughts on how to start and run a old-school style sandbox campaign, one that's open and allows your players to grow in it and do what they want and be the kind of heroes that they want to be. What'd you think? Agree? Disagree? Got some stories to share of your own? I'd really love to hear from you, so drop me a comment on wherever you downloaded this podcast. And, you know, let me know what you think. Thank you for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the show, and I'd really be grateful if you'd give me a review. Let me know what you think. If you want me to do more episodes on running campaigns like this, or what you want to hear more of. And please subscribe to this podcast, whether on iTunes or SoundCloud or your RSS feed. And please do share it with your friends. Let them know and see what they think. All right, so that's it for me here. Until next time, game on.